The Two Johnnies Podcast. The Two Johnnies Podcast.
Two Johnnies recording a podcast. Hello, hello, hello.
Welcome to the Two Johnnies Podcast. We're back. We're here to bring you all the news, fun and crack from the world of the Two Johnnies. I'm Johnny Smacks.
I'm Johnny B.
Thank you very much, firstly, for getting us to number one in the podcast charts. One release and straight to number one. Lads, we're thinking about taking up Formula One. We might win the fucking thing. Who knows? Who knows?
Some carry on. I actually couldn't believe it now. When we found the news, we were actually talking to David from the Care Historical Society. I'm going to tell us. He came up. The Historical Society are thinking of buying a microphone for their speeches. And they were like, who's the one fella in town who has a microphone? So somebody off the committee was elected to go up and talk to Johnny B about microphones. So he was there and the meeting was dragging on a bit now. Like I had
you know that character, if anybody's seen Derry Girls, there's a character and he's just really kind of, you know, he speaks into one
monotone
all the time. And he was just going, yeah, well, you know, I don't know about the microphone. I'm not too sure what exactly we'd be using it for. But I mean, you know, we certainly need a microphone. And I've been tasked with the job now, and I don't know if it's for me or...
It might get a lot of use or it might not get much use, maybe once a month, I think.
So he wasn't the most energetic character I'd met. And while he was mumbling on, I just checked my phone, just checked the charts, and the phone just fell out of my hand. And I just interrupted, what's his name again? Philip.
David.
Yeah, David. I just interrupted him and said, Johnny, we're after going to number one. And then he was looking at us and he's like, what are you going to number one in, lads? I don't understand this podcast.
And do you watch that? Is that on the telly or what is it?
So that was the moment we got to number one. But we want to say thanks very much to everybody who downloaded and listened and told your friends about it. It's absolutely class and it's a great feeling.
And another local man came up to me and he said he was in getting hurley, mate of ours. He's going to be listening now, but I'll take him off anyway. And he said,
shit.
In fairness, I don't know. I listened to that podcast of yours, and in fairness, now it's fucking funny enough. Like, in fairness, you know what I mean? I'd say it broke his heart to pay us the compliment and download it. And if any of you want to know who he is, there's a character in one of our sketches. We've got a sketch about the committee meeting, or no, the players meeting.
Yeah.
And there's one character who can't make training because I'll be doing silage now. I won't be able to go over there. I'll be doing silage, and this lad obviously felt that I was impersonating him as the silage man,
which you were.
I kind of was a bit now, in fairness. So the next night we were at training, doing football drill, and he absolutely burst me open with an elbow into the jaw. And when I was lying on the ground, he said, do a sketch about that, you prick.
I'm taking no responsibility for what you just said about him.
No, but it was lovely. He came in getting hurly, and he was like, I nearly fell out of the fucking tractor. No, listen, it was funny enough, in fairness.
So coming up on this week's podcast, we are asking if underage sport can be too competitive, discussing our memories of teenage discos, getting our weekly news roundup from our favourite retired senior hurler, Noel. You don't want to miss that one. And we're putting the spot once again by Mara's mystery topic.
Ooh.
And we're going to give our yurts and dirts of the week.
Dirt.
Firstly, we're going to answer some of the questions that were raised on last week's podcast. Some serious hot topics.
Matters arising from the last committee meeting.
Do turkeys have willies? No, they don't. According to science.com, they have... How do you pronounce that, Mara? Mara's here, our producer.
It's pronounced cloacas.
Yeah. Clutch, God. The cloaca is the name for the vent that leads to the turkey's sex organs. The turkeys place their vents next to each other in order to allow the transference of sperm. And that is something, lads, when I quit my job, I never thought I'd be saying. So turkeys don't have willies, they have cloacas.
Oh,
now,
well, how'd you go on last night? Lad, she absolutely pulled the cloaca off me. Oh, this is rough, lad. This is rough stuff. So you got to be... Once again, we hope you're over 18 listening to this podcast. Parents, earmuffs now. And the other big topic from last week was, do almonds have nipples? Because, you know, almond milk... Almond? I'm going to go with almond because I'm Irish. And no, they don't have nipples. So the milk is made... You combine the almonds with water and then you kind of crush them all up. You grind them up and you strain it. And Zoe Kavanagh from the Irish Dairy Council was on.
I said it's Zoe.
Zoe? How do you spell Zoe?
Zoe.
Zed Kavanagh from the Irish Dairy Council was on. And she's not happy. She said, you know what I mean? You take all these nuts and you crush them up and you have other ingredients there, emulsifiers and stabilizers and all that. And she said, you can't bait milk. So the Irish Dairy Council, in fairness to them, are probably definitely always going to say you can't bait milk, like, in fairness, like, you know what I mean?
So if you're thinking you're cool drinking almond milk, stop, like.
Well, I don't know. I drink it the odd time. I don't mind.
Yeah, exactly. As I said, if you think you're cool drinking almond milk, stop. Get a bit of dairy into your life, lads. You can't go wrong with the old super milk, a good one. Other forms of milk are available.
One more thing. I thought about starting the podcast, right? And it reminded me of... I was at an open mic night once in Clonmel. And this old man got up, a very good singer. And he had been a great songwriter back in his day and all this. And... nobody was listening in the pub now. Nobody, absolutely nobody was listening. He got up now. Very soft spoken. Hello, I'd like to start tonight. And nobody was listening. And he said, well, I'm going to start tonight with my Michael Caine impression. Don't throw those fucking spears at me. Now that I have your attention, I'd like to start. And he kicked off into a song. So that was a little bit from Zulu, the 1970s movie with Michael Caine. So
that's just randomly appeared in the podcast. Lovely.
You know what I mean? You wouldn't get that in the late now.
Weekly roundup, Johnny. What did we do this week? What are the two Johnnies up to?
What have you been up to, lads? We did a rag week, rolled on, and we did a lunchtime gig in Athlone. Yeah. Congratulations to everybody who turned up. They got out of bed. They put their tracksuit on. They put their slippers on. They got their hair in a bun. And they rolled into college for lunchtime
show. Fat man pants and hun buns everywhere. Mm. In fairness, it was like a scene out of Dawn of the Dead. There was just students just sitting there strung out from Dutch Gold and Galahad.
And there was two boys up the front wearing denim shorts, Barcelona jerseys and flat caps. And they were from Tullamore. They were the Tullamore branch of the Peaky Blinders.
By order of the Peaky Blinders.
By order of the Tullamore Blinders.
And we also did Carlo that night, Rag Week in Carlo. We done a little two-piece music set, something we don't normally do.
Yeah, now we said it last week that Carlo was a raw town, and I stand over it. I wholeheartedly stand over that statement. I do like Carlo.
Mm-hmm.
We enjoyed it. It all went well. They had a barrier across in front of us like we were, you know, laying sewerage or something, laying gas. And afterwards... unhappily enough, a lad came up and knocked over our speaker and it went smashed the window of the pub. But like...
But you can't win them all, lads.
Other than that, I'm sorry, Maura's given us the look of surprise there. Yeah, that happened. Our speaker went through the window of the pub.
It didn't go through the window. No, it just cracked the first glaze of the double glaze, I would say.
And as they said to us, who's paying for the window, lads? And Johnny said...
Whoever broke it can pay for it.
Whoever broke it can pay for it.
If you can find the fella in the white shirt, I'm nearly sure he was from Cork. No surprise there. We also did a gig in Curraghclough in Wexford in conjunction with a GA club. And as always, the GA club took advantage of the situation. The hall, the function room in the hotel was scheduled to hold 300 people and somehow they managed to sell 450 tickets.
I sure will get them in there somewhere.
And the chairman of the club has prepared this brief statement.
Well, dear, you know... if I have to put Vaseline on them and squeeze them inside the door, we'll get them in.
Maybe like blocks, we could lay them on the flat. Sure, can't they stand up down the back? They'll be grand.
So they had 3/4 of the hall seated and they had, unhealthily, around 200 people buried into the back of the hall. But nonetheless, a great gig. Everybody was laughing. Everybody enjoyed it. That's the main thing. The week ahead, what are we doing for the week ahead, John? We're in the great county of lovely Laois.
Portlaoise,
yeah. We're doing a gig in Portlaoise in the Midlands Park Hotel, is it?
In the big hotel there. It's for the Mockra next weekend. The Mockra is great. They say it's about farming. It's really just about riding.
Yeah, basically.
Maura, are we ever in the Mockra?
No, but I have friends who are in it for the riding, so.
Have you numbers for them, no?
Neither of us have any frontage, but
no.
We're great crack.
No. We do great impersonations of farmers. There you go. But that's our big gig for the week ahead. So,
and we're recording.
We're recording, yeah, again. Yeah.
Always non-stop. Recording new songs. So
yeah, we've got it. We've got some really good songs. I can't wait to get them out there for you. But look, moving on with the podcast and into the first topic, we opened our lines of communication with the general public, Snapchat, Instagram, and if you leave a review,
make it a positive one.
Make it a positive. If you're going to leave a review on this podcast, make it a positive one. If you're miserable and hate your life, go away and leave it on someone else's podcast, right? We don't have time to be reading negative shit, right? Right? If you have, just write it on a letter and just burn it then, okay, immediately. But don't forget, actually, to subscribe to the podcast, because you'll get a little notification. You will get a little notification to tell you the podcast is up and such, and tell your friends. But the first topic, topic number one, is underage sport, Johnny. Is it the taking part that matters, or is it all about the winning?
Well, now, we'd be more GA men now. I played a small bit of soccer, but mostly GA now. My one memory of soccer is we were going out playing casual, and Froggy Maguire was the manager, and he was going around giving everyone a team talk, and he was saying, "Now, Barry, what I want you to do is this, you got to move it wide," and he was giving all real tactical stuff, and I was playing the centre midfield, and he just came around to me, and he was like, "Johnny, get stuck in." And he moved on to the next lad. So that was the extent of my soccer career. I had the David Beckham haircut for a little while, but underage, I honestly think it's about just keeping everyone going. Now, I mean, up to under 12. After that, you want to be fucking winning a few things.
Yeah, I don't know. It's strange. Like my memories of underage, I only started hurling my first year under 14. So it's serious shit at that age. You know what I mean? It does matter, like.
Had you never hurled up to that age?
I played in school, and I played Gaelic football and soccer. But for some reason, I was just afraid of the hurling club. I don't know why.
Soft towny, bro.
Yeah, you see, that's I'm from the town. That's the main issue. But like my memories of underage hurling is, yeah, I was a bit of a lunatic, and games mattered a lot. I think parents on the sideline is a massive thing in sport. You know, like some parents are absolute nutters. Like can't get enough of it. They want to be poking every ball, kicking every ball. My mother was exactly like that.
Trish.
Yeah. Now I was a big fella. Underage.
You were a big unit, lad.
I was a big unit now, but I had great hands, but I wasn't the quickest to get around the place. And I remember...
I'm glad you grew out of that, huh?
I just tell you a little one. I was playing an under 14 game in Portreau, and the opposition manager said, "Will someone ever pick up that fat bastard?"
Under 14?
Oh my God.
Under 14. Now, you see, I had scored. I had scored around 2-2. I was going well.
Where were you playing?
I was playing at Carnforth.
Cornerforward.
Yeah, yeah. You see, I was big, so they'd put me in a little tiny lad. Because you know the cornerbacks are usually small. Yeah. That's right, bully him around the place then. But I was going well. So my mother heard this, and I said it to my cousin, who was also on the sideline. I said, "Did you hear what he's after saying?" He said, "Yeah." So we went in for the team talk at halftime, and I was getting a drink of water, and I looked around, and my mother cleared a 7-foot railing and made a run for their manager. Ran across the field. Oh, gee, she was ball-headed. No, she was going for him. And my cousin had got there before. So he had your man pinned by the throat. And my mother jumped up on his back, yippee-ki-yay style. And got him in what can only be like the Kurt Angle lock from wrestling.
Some sort of choke
yeah,
slam.
The Tasmission. So she was hanging over his neck and he had her by the throat. And eventually they broke it up and stuff like that. But That's underage hurling. That's how much that matters. Like,
that's North Tipperary.
Yeah, and me manager said, "Hey, don't mind that handbags," he said. But yeah, like under 14, it's strange. I think it's hard because kids are only developing. And they're only really finding out about themselves as well, really. Yeah. Like what kind of a character they are. So, but I still think you have to win. It's only enjoyable when you're winning, I think.
Yeah, but at underage, you just have to keep everyone going. Because when I was under 12, say, I wasn't making the team. I think I was the goalie on the B team under 12. But by under 16, I was playing for South Tip and went on to get county minor trials and all. So, and then by 25, I was the only guy off that team still playing for the club. So if they'd lost me at under 12, no, I never did much for the club at adult level, you know. But like, I'm just saying.
You were there.
We were debating this about families and all. You have to look. I think in a way you have to look at who's going to stay on. If you're looking at a lad and he's playing under 12 and he's from a family where they all play GA, not that you have to pick him ahead of other lads, but you have to mind him because he's going to play. Whereas there's other lads you know they're not going to stay on. Like if a lad isn't coming training at under 14, he's not going to come training at 21 years of age.
But I mean, do you give everybody game time then? If you're a manager of an underage team, do you give everybody game time? Or do you play your strongest team?
There's enough games in it that you only have to play your strongest team for like a couple of games. There's enough challenge matches and blitzes to be giving everyone games. And then when it comes to the South Championship, you got to win.
Yeah, so basically, no, you're going to play your strongest team when it matters.
When it matters,
you'll play the lads who aren't so good. In challenge games.
I suppose, yeah.
That's fair enough. Then it's all about winning for you. Do you play the lads who train over the lads who don't train? Okay, yeah. So I'll put you in a scenario. Your best player.
Yeah.
He's been off playing soccer for 4 or 5 weeks, right? But the semi-final of the county is coming up.
At what age now?
Under 14.
He's on the bench.
No, I don't believe that for a second.
Yeah.
Definitely. I tell you, I can honestly tell you now, I'd be playing.
You have to build a club before you build a team.
But there's some pressure in underage management.
Wicked.
Like, and we see it in our own clubs. Like, if some fella's young lad isn't playing, or young girl isn't playing, Jesus, he'd nearly slash the tires in your car. Like,
I've seen managers been absolutely blanked by parents because the child wasn't playing.
Yeah. Oh, God.
And do you think kids get too much abuse at underage? What do you think, Maura?
Well, I'm just kind of thinking of when I was playing Gaelic football in primary school, my mother managed the team for a brief while, and she put out the team as, named out the team as whatever, and put 15 players down, and then realised actually for girls football, it's actually going to be only 11 players playing. So she had to call, and she called me because she said, well, if I'm going to have to call somebody, you know, like, I can't keep you on the team, it'll look bad. So, and I was a really good player. I was like, yeah. So that was my mother, yeah. It's a bit harsh, like, so.
It's tough, like, me and you have managed teams, Johnny.
Mm.
And I remember I was managing the Junior B Hurlers. We were playing a challenge match one day, and the opposition only had 14. So one of our boys had to play for the opposition.
Oh, that's.
And now, I ended up giving the, they gave me, like, the black jersey for their team, and I went into the dressing room, and one of our boys had to get it, like. And my mate said it to me afterwards. He said, you looked around the room, and you gave it to me, like. And he never forgave me for it. He said, and, like, Rock Guthrie was there as well at the time. Rock is out in Australia now, a lunatic. And he said, you could have given it to Rock, like. And he said, Rock was training. And he's like, I'm better than Rock. I was like, Rock was training.
So you'll call anyone, Johnny. It doesn't matter to you.
Yeah, because when you get to minor under 21, you need everyone.
Yeah.
You have to instill it young. Lads, you have to come training. Yeah. Not 100% of the time, but, like, don't act the Mickey. Like, come down and train them when you can.
I think things have changed now with the way people treat kids. Like, you know, they treat them lovely now. Like, when I was underage, our own manager used to call me the burger. I'm the burger. Yeah, so, like, that's kind of like,
You were a big unit, in fairness.
I was a big unit, yeah. But, like, I think back to, like, your man abused me in Portro. And actually, I was abused by a fella who's now managing an inter-county team under 16.
What did he call you?
Could you just say verbally abused? Yeah.
Verbally abused. Yeah. Jesus. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was verbally. I can. Yes.
Thank you, Maura.
I'm going on. Thanks, Maura. I am going on the record and saying I was verbally abused. Yeah, again, a reference to my weight at the time in a football match. And I took it upon myself to chase him down the sideline. And I took a swing and kind of caught him in the back of the neck. He half got away from me. And the referee had heard it and never sent me off for anything because he had heard it. He said, I won't say your man's name, but he said, you should know better than to be saying that to kids.
What age were you at this stage?
I was 16.
And your man called you what, a fat bastard?
Yeah, yeah. I just went over and had it out him. He was around, I don't know, 35, 40 at the time. But Duke's out, boy. I doom if you wanted it.
But look, kids, I just think you just keep kids going. In our club last year, we had a great moment at the under-12s. Care finally bet commercials, the big team from Clonmel in football. And the manager took the entire under-12 team up to O'Donnell's garage and got them all swirly ice creams.
Aww. Swirls, HV swirls, yeah. But, like, that meant more to them than medals or anything. Like, they were just, they couldn't wait to play the final. Jesus, if they wanted to, they got more swirls, like. They were nearly baiting them up for it. But, like, the thing I remember from underage sport, Johnny, is the girls played with the boys in certain clubs. Did you ever play with the boys?
Yeah.
Fuck. Yeah, see, it was gas, I was saying to Johnny.
Did a girl beat you up?
Yeah, there's a girl from Killinall, or from Killarwan, Anne-Marie, I don't know her second name now, but she used to play fullback, and I'd swear they just put her on me intentionally, because they knew, like, I wouldn't touch her. So this was, like, under 14, and when I was playing, the girls could play up to 16. Mm. So, I mean, like, I was doing my junior cert, and in my junior cert home ec class, I used to sit beside a girl, and then I used to have to go out and mark her then in the championship game. And another girl I was shifting, I had to mark her as well. That is no word of a lie. I was shifting a young one at the time. And I went out and had to mark her then on the Wednesday night in the championship game.
And did you do her?
No, sure. I took it handy on her. She goes, I wanted to get something off her to be weekend.
Huh? No, then when she broke up with you, you gave her the drop shot, broke her shins.
Yeah, straight away, like 50-50s late in, I just left her up in the air. No, but I remember one time against Mount Rat, it had happened in a challenge game. It had happened to me a few times that like I'd been marking girls and I played horrendously bad because I was afraid to properly challenge them. Like. And then against Mount Rat, they had me warned beforehand. You'd be marking the girl now, but just don't take it easy on her. But the first ball came in, I absolutely lammed her. And there's three or four lads waiting outside the dressing room for me afterwards.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Jesus. With white socks and peak hats on them. They meant business.
Woman beater.
You woman beater. Yeah.
I don't know, but if a girl is going to talk out and play with the boys, like.
Yeah, like, I don't think girls want to be treated any differently, you know, and especially at that age, you're probably simmering height and, like, it's a different thing when, like, you know, puberty and then suddenly lads get a load of muscle and, you know.
That's going to happen us any day now.
There's a question for next week's podcast. Do girls still play with boys? And up until what age? I tell you what, put it this way. I want girls' experience of playing with lads. And
Playing sports against lads.
Jesus Christ, I'm wording this off. Girls' experience of playing sport with lads. So get in touch with us on Snapchat, Instagram, whatever. Yeah. Let us know your experience.
I used to hate marking a girl in the game. I marked this big blonde one from Carrick one time. I didn't know what to do.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
How'd you get on?
Oh, she's terrible.
Two black eyes and a broken nose.
She cleaned me out. I got her home phone number afterwards, though.
So, Johnny, in conclusion, to tie up this topic, is it about the taking part or is it about the winning? For me, you have to be winning. I think there's a pressure nowadays in clubs and like that's soccer, hurling, football, any of the sports. I think there is a pressure to win. Well, if you're a manager.
Yeah, I'll tell you now. We're in South Tipperary down here and I would say 50% of clubs are amalgamated. So at under 14, under 16, you're going to need 20 lads. So I think you've just got to keep lads playing. And yeah, it becomes about winning. But up to under 12, it's all about just playing.
Right, so up to under 12, all about playing. After that, you got to be winning.
Yeah, but now I don't know what to make of those go games. Go home games.
They're trying to soften under 12. That's what it is.
What are go home games?
So it's not, you don't have a regular South Championship of like a group and semi-finals. You have this kind of go games thing, blitz like. No, I like blitzes. Blitzes are a good old crack.
Yeah, but they kind of, you know, there's no real winners. Everybody's a winner.
Yeah.
You can't have someone with that attitude either.
Well, I do think, I agree with you, up until under 12, it should just be about playing and having the crack. But then I do think it is kind of good to teach children about failure and dealing with failure.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so.
You need to be hard. We won a county league football and I got my medal through straight into the bin. I didn't play in the final. Oh, the medal was no use to me. Like, so.
You didn't play in the final?
No.
Where are we? On the bench?
Yeah, I was on the bench. Yeah.
You didn't even get a run?
No.
Oh, lad. Who was manager that time?
Tom McLinchy. If you're listening, Tom.
Tom went on to manage the Waterford senior footballers.
Yeah.
So, Tom, if you're listening, Johnny has...
Whenever he meets me, he tells me, you have a great, a lovely left leg. And I feel like saying, yeah, that's why you left me on the fucking bench in the league final, Tom.
But so, you've
I'm
obviously
not,
gotten
I'm not
over
bitter
it.
In the fucking slightest yeah, about
hey,
it.
Hey, even I got a medal for that county league.
Yeah. I think everyone in the town got a medal for that county league. So, that'll tell you now, that's in a bin in Care House Hotel somewhere. No, moving on from that topic. Our next segment. Yes, lads. Yes. He's here. He's pulled up outside. The Massey Ferguson has been parked. He's now lint rolling his leather jacket as we speak. We are joined by hurling royalty. It's Mr. Noel Furlong. It's time for Noel's News.
Noel's News.
Noel, it's absolutely fantastic to be joined, to be graced in your honour once again on this podcast. Last week's went down an absolute treat. What have you got for us this week in Noel's News?
You still didn't start out that dirt intro music.
I thought you loved that, Noel.
No, it's pure scutter.
It's Guns N' Roses is more your style,
isn't it? It's like a bad Whitesnake. No, that's what it's like. Like something you'd see down a bad cover band.
Bad cover band. Okay, Noel. It's all yours.
Okay. First item in Noel's News this week, big weather warning coming in. There's a thing called the Beast from the East and it's not a Ukrainian powerlifter. It's actually a load of snow. There's snow, coming from Russia. It's going to be minus 8 this week. Freezing. Going pure freezing, right? And my one thing I would say to you that this week is let the dog sleep in the shed. Okay? Now, Carmel, my one, she wanted to let the dog sleep in the back kitchen. I said, this is not Scooby-Doo. Okay? This is not Animal Farm. You know what I mean? So I'm letting the dog sleep in the back shed. And she also onto me to get double glazing. And I think this double glazing is the greatest con going. I grew up knowing double glazing. Having a drop of double glazing in my day. We used to go to school with a hot spud in our pocket. And of a Sunday, you might get the top of a sausage. And that was... And we know double glazing. You know what I mean? I mean, I put in the stove. I know how much she wants. I got her kippins and brickets.
Kippins? What are kippins?
Do you never hear kippins, young fella?
No.
And by God, you know you're from the town. Kippins are the little bittings of timber you get used to start to get the fire going.
Kindling?
Kippins. Huh?
Okay, okay.
Kippins. So, that I, you know what I mean? I'm out with Carmel at the moment over the kippins. Now, I don't bother with the double glazing because I have a secret weapon. I wears a thermal vest. And you tuck it in to your britches. Keep out the old draft. Young lads now don't tuck in their t-shirts at all. And I have an old donkey jacket that I got when I was over in London in the 70s. When I was co-pilot on a cement mixer in Cricklewood. And I have the same donkey jacket. My other recommendations would be porridge. You got to eat porridge. Wear porridge, I was nearly going to say. Eat porridge. Young lads nowadays with their Pop-Tarts and cups of coffee and it's fucking no good. Porridge is a man's breakfast. Man's breakfast. And I had a row with a fella the other day. I was at a wedding. And he went up and he said, give me 2 cups of coffee. And I said, what are you drinking that dirt for? He said, I have a long drive home. I said, wouldn't tea get you home? Wouldn't tea get you home? Huh? Notions. Absolute notions. Fella's drinking lattes and all this dirt. So there's going to be serious weather coming. But lads, where did I hear that? Only Metairn. And you know Metairn are the most unreliable shower ever to fall down to be the scourge of this nation. I'll tell you, Metairn are as bad as the Olympic Council.
Who are as bad as...
No, I'll tell you one thing now. Right, I was telling you last week that the Olympic Council are as bad as the Black and Tans. Because you know where the money goes. You know where it goes, right? I'll tell you one thing now. I heard something about Metairn. The lad born in Metairn, he's a cousin of Cromwell.
Jesus Christ.
Right? And you know me, I Cromwell, Oliver Cromwell, was only a bollocks.
Okay, no.
Right? There's a big statue to Oliver Cromwell outside the House of Commons in England, right? London. I swear, one of these days, I'm going to go over and poke the bronze head off him. Cromwell, you prick. You know what I mean? I'd put him and Metairn in the same category.
Oh, Noel, you never cease to amaze me.
Cromwell, only a bollocks.
Can I ask you a question, Noel?
Well?
Is there any news on Kearney's dog, Cornel?
Or Cornel? Oh, he's fine. He's fine. Yeah, I was only talking to Pat Kearney the other day. Now, I can confirm Cornel has sorted out. The big bitches are not in heat. The big bitches are cold. So Cornel, he's going around with a big hard rod in him. And he has... Yeah, the big bitches are cold. They're not in service. So Cornel has to make do with sniffing their arse. So that's my update on Cornel. Kearney was saying Cornel, he's gone soft. He won't eat the nuts anymore. They have to give him the wet food.
Okay, yeah,
he's not happy. But I think when the bitches are hard, he'd eat the hard food.
Okay, Noel.
My second gripe this week, my second item of news for Noel, this is a very strange story. Now, you know the Winter Olympics, Ron, and you know I fucking hate them. So, there was a Swiss Olympic skier called Mischa Gasser. right? Now, my Swiss wouldn't be great, but that's how I think you pronounce his name. Now, his father, Gudjo Hulier, I think, something like that anyway, and his wife, Rita Rutterman. You know Rita, you do?
I do, yeah, yeah.
55, 57 years of age. Now, do you know what they did, right? The father, Gudjo, he cycled from Switzerland all the way to South Korea. Cycled 10,000 miles. He said it was handier than going Ryanair. Honest to God, he cycled 10,000 miles and went through extreme working conditions, right? They camped out the whole way and all. They went through Kazakhstan and Azerbaijan, the whole fucking lot. Cycled 10,000 miles to watch the young fella. The young fella was into aerial skiing and he came fifth. He didn't even get a fucking medal after the father and mother cycling 10,000 miles to watch him play. Huh?
There you go.
I wonder did they hop the fence and start abusing the referee. Now, and the father was actually refused entry into China. He couldn't get into China. The bouncers said no way. He couldn't get a visa because he had a big beard. That's the truth. Couldn't get in. And it reminded me at a time that my young cousin, Redzer, he came down from Dublin and he was after getting his eyebrow pierced and her grandmother wouldn't let him into the house. She said, "You're not coming in. Get that dirt off your face." And that was, he had to take it out and then the grandmother let him in. But that was like the father, Gudjo, he couldn't get into China. So now, the one thing I couldn't find out is if they didn't go through China, how the fuck did they get to South Korea? Because lads, take out a map. Take out a map. And now maybe they took a lift in Mongolia. I don't know. But anyway, when they got to South Korea, when they got to South Korea, what did they do? They camped. They camped in a public field. Like the Phoenix Field above in Dublin.
Phoenix Field, Phoenix Park.
Do you know, whatever, yeah. Do you know what it was? -8. And they camped. The Swiss are his fucking man, lads. I'll tell you that now. He wouldn't even get a hotel room for the wife after she followed him the whole way to South Korea. And from there, they're going to Japan. They're getting the boat to Fukuoka. I think it's pronounced.
It's a state of mind, I'd say.
No, Fukuoka. Fukuoka in Japan. And they're going to fly home and get the visas sorted. I think that's how you pronounce it. So they're going to get the boat, and it's only a short little boat trip, and then they're going to go cycling again. So they cycled the whole way. Incredible story. 10,000 miles on a bike. Now, I mean, I used to cycle to games in Semple Stadium in Turles, but like, that'd be a bit of a push. You know, you'd have to stop in Holy Cross for a few pints on the way home. So that's my story number two. My third story, of course, in local news, the big story is Dwyer's cat has gone missing.
Where's she gone?
Now, Dwyer's cat, if anyone has seen it, is she's brown. And she had little white paws on her, like she's wearing little pop socks. And she has quite a large femur and pelvis bones on her. And that's why Dwyer's named the cat Beyonce. Now you ask, where is Beyonce gone? Now, she used to walk down the wall. Dwyer's are our neighbours at home. And look, to be honest, the cat was pissing all over Carmel's petunias, right? So where is the cat? Now, I just want to take this opportunity to say I definitely didn't hit that cat over the back of the head with a shovel and bury it behind the skunk bush, right? There wasn't a daffodil left in the fucking garden after Beyonce. So if any of you have any information on Beyonce's whereabouts, you can ring Pascal in the barracks, but I wouldn't hold out too much hope, to be honest, to find that fucking cat. Now, the daughter, of course, Susan, is Dwyer's daughter, and she's very sad over the loss of her cat because Beyonce had a little kitten, a little ginger kitten named Ed Sheeran. And you used to see Ed Sheeran and Beyonce going everywhere together, around the field and eating out of bins and carrying on. And, you know, and Beyonce with the mother, she'd be walking down the road and Ed Sheeran would be right up her hole. He'd be sniffing her arse and he used to do whatever she'd do. And he's absolutely lost. He'd go down like a little lost kitten now, Ed Sheeran. Don't know what to do without Beyonce. So if you come across Beyonce, you can ring the guards. But like I said, I definitely did not hit that cat over the back of her head with a shovel and bury it, okay? So, and that thing, that's going to conclude my news for this week, young fella.
Ladies and gentlemen, Noah's News! Hello! Woo! All right, it's that time of the week where everybody's favorite mead woman gives us her mystery topic. See how good I see you. I'm getting more professional at this. Maura, you're the producer of this show. You have a very hard job, I must say. but you're going to give us our mystery topic for this week. We've had no prep. We have no idea what you're about to throw our way. But look, we'll deal with it.
Okay, so my mystery topic this week is heroism. I want to know, have you been a hero? Has somebody been a hero for you? Or have you witnessed somebody being a hero? Because this relates to something that happened this time last year involving my father. Now, you may know this story because it was the second most read story on the Farmers Journal website last year. Basically, I came home to Meath from at the weekends, and I was sitting down after having a chat with my dad. And
just to get the Dublin out of you.
Yes, exactly. And it's just, and after half an hour of the chat, Daddy goes, "Oh, did I tell you about the high speed chase I stopped?" No, Daddy, I think I'd remember. Basically, what had happened was during that week, the neighbour sheep had broken into his sheep, and he had them rounded up in a pen. And he was there sorting them out. And rather than leave the tractor and trailer out of the way, he just decided he'll leave it in the middle of the road. And if somebody comes along, then he'll move it. So a typical farmer there. And was there sorting the sheep away. And next thing, this lad comes running through the pen. He hears, obviously, like car wheels stop, brake or whatever. And then this lad goes running through the pen up the hill. Two guards in pursuit. And Daddy's like, "What's going on here?" A couple more guards arrive in the scene. Your man who's after running through the sheep, the guy had allegedly ran through a checkpoint in Nobber and was basically being pursued by the Gardaí. And so then my dad was, there was a bit of a standoff. My dad was like, "Lad, you may come down, you may get it over today." Daddy wasn't impressed. He's sheep to sort.
Where was your man? Up the top of the hill?
It was, yeah. No, it's a really steep hill. So and the guards didn't bother going chasing up. My dad said to me as well, he was like, he was a big lad now. He was fairly out of wind by the time he got halfway up. So, so he was just...
The guards were down the bottom of the hill.
Yeah, and they were just waiting. So eventually he came down and...
Your father talked him down.
He did, yeah, yeah, yeah. So.
And did your man have a weapon or anything now?
No. He was
sorry, this is Nobber.
Yeah. Yeah, so like basically, it came and the way my dad summed up the story, so it was an hour and a half waiting now, and Daddy was saying, I was covered in sweat from sorting out the sheep. I was that wait, standing around the cold for an hour and a half, I got a dose of a cold out of it. So my dad stopped a high speed chase and he got the man flu. So so not all heroes wear capes.
Johnny.
Fair play. What's your dad's name?
Larry Fay.
By Larry Fay, by.
Man, Larry, by. He's now been recruited by the special agents of An Garda Síochána as a negotiations expert.
But you know how I think he got good at negotiating stuff? Because he used to run a pub. So, like, if you were trying to get people to leave after, closing time is, like, right now, time, folks, like, people don't want to leave. You have to get them, convince them. So he developed his negotiating skills.
So is it like when some lad is out in the beer and he's like, "You may go home to the wife, you may get her over with," like, yeah, that kind of a tactic.
That's it exactly.
I'll give you one for the road there if you just head on. Johnny, have you ever been a hero, or has anyone ever been a hero to you?
Have I ever been a hero? I scored the winner in first year Gaelic football once, all right.
As we said, not all heroes wear a cape. I have never really been a proper hero. I don't think so, anyway, unless anybody remembers me being a hero, but I don't think so. But I've had someone be a hero to me. You might wanna put out an old podcast disclaimer there, Mara, of the story I'm about to tell. She'll be alright. I went to Santa Ponsa.
Okay.
On a lad's holiday. And we left Cork Airport happy out. We had a couple of small of the miniature bottles of Smirnoff on the way over on the plane. And we went out that night, and I might have had one or two too many, and I passed out on the street, and I can just remember a couple of girls from Sligo standing over me saying, "Don't worry, we've called an ambulance," as a luminous green vomit projected from my mouth. And I woke up
drinking the old toilet duck again.
I was on the Harpic again, John. Yeah, but I woke up in the hospital in Mallorca, and this nurse was just standing over me. I had not only a pair of boxer shorts on. She said, "You will need to leave." And I said, "Yeah, I've got me clothes." And she handed me a black bag, and I pulled a t-shirt and a pair of denim shorts out of the bag that were just covered in sick. So I had no idea what happened to me. But I went back to the apartments that morning, and the lads had shown massive concern, you know. Mm-hmm. They were still sitting around a table drinking vodka Red Bulls at 9 o'clock in the morning, and they said, "Do you want to go for a game of volleyball?" Not looking at the fact I had 5 stitches over my eye. So I still didn't know what happened, and I went about my business that day, and there was a couple of girls looking at me while I was in the swimming pool, and I was like...
Oh, nothing new there?
Oi, oi. No, but I was wondering, like, do they know me? They were kind of looking at me as if they know me. Mm. And then I walked past them. I said, "I'll walk around now by them." And they said, "Are you the lad? Did you end up in hospital last night?" And I was like, "Yeah, yeah." And they were like, "Oh, we're the three girls from Sligo who looked after you. We called an ambulance and made sure you're all right." And they tried to ring him. For some reason, I was calling out for him. For Johnny B. And they rang. Remember, they rang you.
Yeah, like, "We have your friend here." And I was at home in Tipperary, like, and they're out in Santa Ponsa.
Yeah, and so the girls had helped me. So they were absolute heroes. And it turned out that night we went for dinner, and a girl said, "Did you hear about the poor Irish fella last night? He fell down that flight of stairs, like 42 stairs." Yeah, so I had fallen down a flight of 42 steps and miraculously only had 5 stitches over my eye.
Okay. And then the best, you came home with the armband they give you in hospital, and it said Teddy on it. Yeah. You told him your name was Teddy Dwyer.
Teddy Dwyer. So we have a friend called Teddy O'Dwyer. And when they asked me my name, because I didn't want to be charged. You know what I mean? Yes. Like, a young lad going to Santa Ponsa, you don't have that much money. I didn't want to be charged, so I told him my name was Teddy Dwyer, and they thought it was Teddy Dwyer. Must thought I was a Russian spy or something. But yeah, that was... If those Sligo girls are listening, girls, you're great heroes of mine. Thank you very much. Probably wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you, because all the other party goers were just busy walking past me.
And the moral of the story is that you never overindulged in alcohol ever again.
Yes, I never did. I learned my lesson from that. And I must say to anybody listening to this podcast, do not overindulge. I know Rag Week's coming up, lads. Take it handy, will you? Behave and mind yourselves.
This is it. And right, I'm going to be a hero now, because we heard the warning there from Noel that the beast from the east is coming. You're sitting here in shorts. I'm worried about you, lad. So I got you a little something during the week, okay? It has a tog value.
Look at this. Oh, lads. I've just been handed a thermal short sleeve vest. And she knows my size and everything. I'm kitted out for the winter. Yeah, there is a reason I always wear shorts, Mara. And that's just out of pure laziness. I have claustrophobic knees. I have to let the knees out. No, we were at a do today. And me and Johnny bought it suits on. We're doing a corporate do today, and we bought it suits on. And I couldn't wait to get out of suits and get back into my shorts. So I'm sitting here in my shorts. I'm going to use this thermal vest during the week when the beast from the east hits.
It was funny because when Mara came in, I was wearing a suit, and she said to me, "Go on there and get changed, it's fine." Like, you knew I wasn't going to do the podcast in a suit.
So we're back in the hoodies. We're back in the hoodies now.
I have my sambas back on.
So has anyone ever been a hero to you, John?
Oh God, I don't know.
Anyone who's ever entertained you is probably been a hero, to be fair.
Yeah, actually, my childhood hero would have been, of course, Owen Kelly, the son of God.
Yeah.
He's probably Tipperary's best hurler at the time, and also him being from South Tipperary was a big thing, because he's the only man from South Tipperary to ever captain Tip to an All-Ireland. And any time I used to meet him, you know, I had a few songs out for Tipperary, and the odd time I'd be up in the dressing room. And any time I'd see Owen, I'd be like, you know, "The South is rising, man, the South!" And I'd say he was fair sick of it by the end of it.
He's like, "Oh, there's that fella again.
That lad again."
So that's your hero, and that's my hero's topic. Mara, another good topic. I like it. That's Mara's mystery topic.
Thank you, Mara.
Now, don't forget to rate, review, and tell your friends about the Two Johnnies podcast. And you'll find us on Instagram and the Snapchat, the whole lot, the Two Johnnies, Johnny V, Tipman, and Johnny Smacks. Now, we're on to the meat and two veg. Topic number 3. It's been in the news this week about teenage discos, so we thought we'd give our take on teenage discos. And also, we don't condone bad behaviour at teenage discos. Johnny, what's your memories of the teenage discos you went to? Now, you're 47, so it was a so the teenage discos back in the 80s were a bit different.
My teenage discos were in black and white. No, the teenage discos in my day were down in the hall. They were in the parochial hall. And used to get away with... There was a pub. It's closed down now, so I can say it. There was a pub. And the manager, Busty, he used to give us a pint. Now, I'm not joking. This place was loose. I once got served in my school uniform. Honest to God. You go in there and have 2 pints of Budweiser and over to the teenage disco. Now, of course, we shouldn't have been drinking. Like, we could have died. That could have happened to us. And the crack had been 90. She'd been tied in the teenage disco. And one night near the end, they put on Slipknot. A bit of heavy metal. So myself and all the other metallers were delighted.
All the corn dudes. The hairies, as they were known in Roscrea at the time.
The rockers.
The hoodies.
The hoodies. I was a hoodie, yeah. When I was young, but I had the old scraggly hair and the old black corn hoodie on me and jumping around shouting the Slipknot at the teenage discos. And I guess my one memory of a teenage disco, anyone who's been to our live show knows we have a song and we have a whole piece about a mate of ours called Chalk Ice. And I actually asked one of the boys, would he ask Chalk Ice's sister, Ailish, to meet me? What did you say shift or meet? Or what did
meet,
you say?
Yeah. It was meet and Roscrea as well, yeah. Will you meet her?
Will you meet my friend? So I said to Jo, will you ask Ailish there if she'll meet me? And I was pure nervous, like, so I went into the Jacks. And then I came back and he was like, she said no.
Oh.
Right? Yeah, I know Mara, right? Do you know what happened 10 years later? Jo and Ailish got married.
Oh my God.
I don't know if he ever asked her. He wanted her for himself.
He wanted to keep her all for himself.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're hearing horror stories lately about teenage discos.
Too much drink
and all that. Like, you know,
there's no need for it. Like.
No, there's absolutely no need for it. But I mean, do parents have to take a bit of responsibility there?
I think so, yeah.
It's amazing how we both looked at Mara.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, okay, right. First off, I took the confirmation pledge and I didn't drink until I was 18. So, like, my experience of teenage discos was always sober and it was always great crack, like, you know. But yeah, I think now, having said that, my brothers didn't, and and mommy and daddy always found out. But yeah, I think, like, you have to do the drop off and the pick up, and be aware of, you know, if you see them bringing a backpack,
if they're leaving the house,
they're not doing their ecker. Yeah. They're not doing their homework.
Yes. Because it's like, as well as that, like, well, I know a couple of girls would have been like, they said they were going out in one particular outfit, going over to a friend's house, they might be getting changed to something quite different.
But not to sound like an old fella, but at times we'd be driving past the teenage disco, and feckity, they'd have nothing on them.
Yeah.
I don't know how they don't freeze, and how they don't die in pneumonia.
Well, right. I know I sound like an old one as well, but like, do you ever see the height of the heels they're wearing? I'd just be worried for their ankles. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like calves.
It's a lot different now to when I was going to discos. When I used to go to discos, I used to go to Club Mecca in Nina, which is now closed down as part of the Abbey Court Hotel. And there used to be foam parties. Yeah.
They're gone now, are they?
I think they're gone, yeah. I don't know. Maybe so. Maybe in like Mallorca, they'll probably be still there.
I haven't been to a teenage disco in a while now.
No. It's been a few years already.
Ever since that restraining order.
But
joke.
You're not, yeah, that's a podcast disclaimer there. Johnny B is not barred from teenage events. But no, like, talking about parents' responsibilities, my mother used to drop us all over to Nina. It's a half an hour's drive from Roscrea. And she used to wait the 3 hours we're inside and pick us up. She'd be waiting right at the door when I got out. Mm. And one night then, me mam used to work in the shop at the school. So everybody knew her. So she was waiting at the door for me one night. And the lads picked her up and dragged her into the disco. And I was out giving it loads on the dance floor in me Ben Sherman shoes and me old Jack and Jones shirt. And I turned around, my mother was in at the disco. And I just lifted her up and just carried her out and was like, don't ever do this to me again.
Oh my God.
But I mean, talking about the whole drinking before teenage...
Did you wear Ben Sherman shoes to a phone party?
Yeah, like back in my going out.
Suede shoes.
Yeah. So the dress sense when I used to go to the discos was suede shoes, a pair of suede cords, and then used to wear like a black shirt. Oh, horrendous thinking back to it. But the suede shoes, when you'd go into the foam... And you'd come home. By the time you got back to Roscrea, the suede was just gone rock hard. The shoes were literally, you could break them in two when you got back to Roscrea.
They were like the prawn crackers you get in the Chinese.
But yeah, my mum used to always wait for me. And talking about, you know, the whole drinking thing in teenage discos, I tried that once. So I was working part-time in Lifestyle in Roscrea, and it used to be, it was in the shopping centre. And my manager at the time, she was obviously over 18. So I asked her, like, would you go and get me and my friend a nagging of vodka each for the teenage disco? And she said, yeah, okay, like, you know, don't get caught. I was like, yeah, I won't get caught. So, like, you know, me being the clever fella I was, I said, oh, I definitely won't get caught now. So I got the two Nagans vodka on the Thursday evening. I worked 4 to 8 in, and I got back at 8 o'clock. And I said, I'll hide them now and I'll get them in tomorrow just as we're going out the door to teenage disco. My friend Darren was coming over. So I got the two Nagans and slipped them in underneath the wheelie bin. And I thought, yes, foolproof. Foolproof, that's no issue. So I got dressed anyway. I was gelling the hair. 2 pots of Brill Cream later. I had it styled up. And Darren was called over to the house and we said, yeah, see you later, Matt. She said, yeah, see you now, boys. Behave, mind yourselves. Went out the door and sitting Darren ran around the side of the house and I was down on my hands and knees. I couldn't find these two nagans of vodka under the wheelie bin. Next thing, I just turned around then and the mother was standing there with the two nagans of vodka in her hand. And she said, are you looking for something, boys? And I just went white in the face and she said, huh? And be up early in the morning now to be getting away with that around me. So the mother was always a step ahead. So that was it. I just never drank. Because I could never get away with it. And she buried the head off me if I did. So.
It's dangerous stuff, like, and especially like spirits and that, because at that age, like, you'd be drunk after a can. So people going out drinking spirits is just mental, like.
Yeah, but like the whole idea of a teenage disco as well is that you go off and you're like, it's pure innocent. You're having fun with your friends and you're getting the cheeky shift as you know. So
that's all about the shifting. But things like even style has changed. Like when we were going, Johnny, we were just chatting the other day, used to be Czech skirts, Czech mini skirts and snow boots.
Oh, jeez,
if they're wearing the snow boots in the they were the real deal.
Mara's rolling her eyes, but I'll tell you, Mara, when I was 14, if I saw a girl in that short Czech miniskirt, the snow boots and the tank top.
Oh, God.
Oh, mother of God. She had the kind of Avril Lavigne look.
Yeah.
You'd be chasing her home, I tell you.
No, see, I'm thinking back to my own kind of teenage disco fashion stuff. So I'm a bit older than ye, and Spice Girls would have been like big around the time I was 13, 14, 15. And I loved Mel C. So I just followed her fashion sense.
The Adidas tracksuit bottoms.
Oh, like, you know, there was a reason why Mel C was the single one for a long time. didn't help me with getting the shift, but...
Ah, that's brilliant.
Well, we recently... where were we? There was a teenage disco going on and we went in and we got clobbered for photos and stuff we were passing. And there was a couple of girls wearing tops and GAA shorts at a teenage disco. Yeah. Now, they were probably all under 15, were they?
Yeah, I would say around that age. Anyway,
now, the disco looked like some crack.
Yeah.
The lights were good. It was a proper nightclub and all. It was better than the Procol Hall and Slipknot playing, I can tell you that now. But it was gas. We said to them, like, are you coming from training or something? Did you just pop into the disco on the way home? And they're like, no, that's the style.
Yeah, but see, the thing is as well, particularly for teenage girls, is that, like, if your friend wears something, you wear it as well. Yeah, like, you just copy each other's
that's
style.
That's probably why there was 12 girls there wearing Silvermine's GA shorts.
You know what I mean? See, when the Vice Majority Shore started wearing the skinny black jeans, that's why Smacks wears them.
Exactly. And the scandalous t-shirts I also wear.
But if people want to bring back those short plaid skirts and the snow boots, that'd be okay with us.
We'll endorse them. Bring back the snow boots, lads. Women in snow boots. I tell you, next night I go out and I want to see all women in snow boots. Snow boots and Czech miniskirts.
Yeah. People need to buy them now anyway for the Beast from the East. So.
Yeah, Beast from the East. You'll need the snow boots, lads.
But just on the teenage disco, like Mara says, it is about the crack, really.
Yeah.
And
well, I mean, when I used to go to Club Mecca, the bouncers used to do a breath test. You'd have to breathe in the bouncer's face on your way in. Like.
Very scientific.
Yeah, it was. They were leading the technology race at the time over there in Club Mecca. But I mean, to be fair, like, you know, it would deter you a bit, like.
Yeah.
So, like.
Yeah. Well, the teenage disco that I went to. Now we were spoiled. It was a step up from the Parochial Hall. It was the Oasis nightclub outside Carrickmacross. Like, ooh. And I think there'd be probably about. On a Friday night, there might be 4,000 teenagers there. So just...
What?
Yeah.
There's some shifting done there.
Oh, pure cattle market.
Oh,
like,
my God. I'd say Trush was at an absolute all-time high.
Coal source. What? Sales of the Virax spiked in Carrickmacross tomorrow.
What's that one you get? Glandular fever. That's it. That's what I meant. Not Trush.
Can you get glandular fever from shifting?
Can I?
Yeah. It's a pass-through saliva.
Yes, this conversation took a turn for the
There you go, lads. Avoid glandular fever.
the big teenage disco back in my day was Dundrum out in the middle of nowhere, and we had a little band going, and there was these boys, they'd been on, I don't know, were they the Voice of Ireland or
Eurostar, Johnny, probably at the time,
whatever it was at the time, these four lads from Dublin singing in the big Dublin accents, and we were at it, and we had a little band going out in the shed there, and my mate Gonzo, we went in and these boys were playing, and like Gonzo was like, fuck it, we're better than them, lad. We're better than them, lad. So he went up to the bouncer and he was like, we're only about 14, 15. He's like, who's the manager here? So we got the manager and Gonzo was like, we've got a band. We're better than them, lad. And I swear, everyone will know us, like, can we play next month? And your man was like, yeah, okay, you can do an hour at the start of the night, like. So it didn't get busy till 9. We might come on at 8:30 and 9:30, like.
Yeah.
So the following month, we arrived on anyway, and we were doing, sure, some 41 and Papa Roach and
Blink 182.
Do you have the time to listen? We were doing all that, like, and just went on great. I remember there was about 1,500 people at it, big junior cert results night. And I'd say every fella with long hair and a black t-shirt got the shift at that night.
Every fella with a ponytail was just
got the shift that night. And I remember I was going out the back and we were loading all the gear into the back of Buddy Fannery's blue Hiace. And Shep was in the passenger seat, so there'd be the five of us would be in the back smoking fags. I didn't smoke, no, I had asthma, so I couldn't smoke. Never bothered me personally. But we were loading the gear, and I remember it started to rain. So I was running from the van into the back door, and the bouncer stopped me. He was like, oh, where are you going? Where do you think you're running? And this guard leaned across and said, it's okay, he's in the band.
That was when you knew you'd made it, Johnny.
You're so cool.
That's when I knew I was going to be in a band.
Going to be a rock star.
Yeah.
Going to be...
So teenage discos, because as well as just having teenage discos, something that's gone from teenage discos now is the teenage battle of the bands.
I thought you were going to say the slow set there.
The slow set's gone too, yeah.
I don't know, is it? Is it?
Oh, yeah. It's. There was no slow sets in my time, innit?
Yeah, no. There was
Scoop and Usher.
Yeah.
I'll always remember that. Every time I hear Fat Man Scoop now, I was thinking like my first shift.
Did you get your first shift to Fat Man Scoop?
Yeah, to Fat Man Scoop. You know, Brooklyn Clan.
Brooklyn Clan.
Yeah, shifting away, just covered in foam. I think she was good looking. There was around 5 foot of foam on the dance floor. I could barely see her. And the foam was just window lean mixed. So there'd be a bang of window lean. But I tell you one thing, your skin would be as clean as a whistle the next day.
Bucket of plaz.
Johnny B, what was Battle of the Bands?
Battle of the Bands was in our town, there was a couple of bands. We had a band and there was a few other bands. And you'd all play down the Procol Hall, everyone would get half an hour and they'd be a winner. And I remember one of the first ones we did, I was playing the guitar and my mate Tony was singing, and Tony was playing the lead guitar as well. He was good in the guitar now, I was rough enough, like. And what did we want to play? We wanted to play a Papa Roach, Cut My Life Into Pieces, Last Resort, right? We wanted to play that and I couldn't do the fiddly bit. So Tony was like, I'll do the fiddly bit and you sing it, like, because you couldn't do the fiddly bit and sing it at the same time. Teenage disco, and there we were playing Master of Puppets, like. Honest to God, 14 years of age at a teenage disco playing like heavy metal from the 1980s, like. No wonder I wasn't cool and getting the shift. Anyway, so I was doing Papa Roach and I put down the guitar, and this was my first ever chance at being a front man, 13, 14 years of age. Absolutely going nuts. I did a stage dive and all. There was only two lads. My mate Brian Houlihan caught me, like, at the stage. So afterwards, the lad who ran the disco was over the ladies' football club, a big lad from Cork. And he came up to me going, will you stop that? You've got a nice little band. You're going to fucking ruin it. We should carry on. Johnny B, you're going to fucking ruin that band with your carry on.
You're laughing at him now.
Actually, he's a grand old divil. He got me to present some medals there last year. And I didn't bring it up, you know. I'm the bigger guy. I've gotten over it, so... The Battle of the Bands needs to come back. And I remember I was at one. This is for some reason, I was in Trim or Navan one night. And I was at Yamo. And there was a Battle of the Bands, right? And it was all bands coming up doing punk gigs and all this. And one lad got up on his own with an electric guitar and sang Rockin' in the Free World. He didn't have an acoustic or nothing. Now, he wasn't like a nice singer-songwriter. He just got up and absolutely lashed out, keep on rocking! And that guy is kind of my personal hero, to answer your who's your heroes question. Whoever that lad was is an absolute lunatic.
So to conclude the teenage disco.
Don't be drinking.
Don't be drinking, lads. Stay safe.
And definitely don't smoke fags, because like the song says, fags are manky.
Yeah. And we want to hear people's feedback. Get on to us during the week. Give us your teenage disco stories and we'll share them out.
Yeah, and is the slow set still a thing?
Is the slow set still a thing? There's a question. Do turkeys have willies? Is the slow set still a thing? All the questions you need answered, lads. We're here.
The teenage disco on Care, we did an appearance once. Remember?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. This young lad came in from Carrick and he said... I was like, well, people were coming up getting photos with us, like, and this lad is pure cool. He's like, how's it going, bae? You know, he was only about... I was like, well, what age are you? He's like, I'm 14. I'm just kind of here minding the sister. See that one, the brown skirt? That's her. If you see anyone over 12 shifting her, let me know. I'll puck your head off.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Our fella get the shift in and around 10 lads just jump around and going, whoa! Trying to pull his fans down. Weird.
I remember
weird.
One night I jocked Colin Baker. We were down in the Broken Hall and he was shifting one and the boys went over and pulled down his tracksuit pants. And that was a great sport, jocking lads. And then you'd be hoping he'd be on a horn, like, you know. Christ, he wasn't at the time now, but you know what I mean? Yeah.
That's not a cool thing. Don't do that to your friends.
Don't do that, lads.
I don't think lads wear tracksuit. I suppose lads do wear tracksuit pants to disco still.
The Hardy Boys do. You know? Yeah. The old cool dudes around the town. The tough teddies around the town.
The lads still wear the jeans and the short.
Yeah. Full farmer mode. Big belt buckle. Yeah. They love Jimmy Buckley style.
Don't mention Jimmy
Buckley. All right, Jimmy, if you're out there, if you're listening.
Our offer to fight you still stands,
still
Jimmy.
Stands, Jim.
Ed Sheeran as well. We're doing a gig in Carlow during the week. And a bunch of lads came up and said, look, if Ed Sheeran starts starting, we'll jump in.
We have your back. And they don't fuck around in Carlow.
They were junior sea hurlers from Laois. Now, Johnny, what's next?
We're going to be joined by a very holy man. With Lent in full flow, we're going to be joined by the local parish priest, Father John Clancy. So put your hands together, please, lads, for Father John Clancy.
Thank you very much for that raucous round of applause. Thank you again for having me on this show. Of course, Lent has taken full effect, 40 days and 40 nights, but I don't think anybody can stay off it. I mean, you can't stay away from the solemn touch, the closeness, the intimacy, and the feeling it gives you when you finish. I mean, those first couple of bites from a Galaxy caramel are just incredible. So, I don't expect you to be staying off chocolate. People think it's all about giving up drink or chocolate. I mean, I gave up Guinness for Lent. I've taken up Smiddix instead. I believe it's a nicer drink. And people think it's all about giving up chocolates, you know. But our Lord himself was very, very partial to lime bars. He had an awful thing for lime. Simon of Cyrene was force-feeding him lime bars while he was carrying the cross. He's an awful divil, that Simon of Cyrene.
Oh, Lord.
So I would just say to you, lads, enjoy Lent. 40 days and 40... you know, it's just not doable. And that's coming from me in the Catholic Church. So lads, stay off the lime bars. Have a couple of Guinnesses for yourself. And enjoy the rest of Lent, okay? Stay safe.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
Well, thank you, Father John, for that completely fucking mental Lent message.
He's mad, man, that priest. That priest is insane in the membrane. But it was a nice tune. It was nice. Brought me back to the factory days. I used to work in the factory, work on a line, and the fella in charge, the supervisor, used to call Ollie Murphy. And any time he'd walk in, the boys would let you know by singing, Ollie Murphy, Ollie Murphy. And that's how we knew he was coming. Big mallet head on him coming around the corner. Ollie, if you're listening, boy, he's from Offaly. That's why I don't like him. But yeah, look, moving right on with the podcast. It's time for Yurt or Dirt.
Yurt or Dirt?
Yurt or Dirt. Dirt, as they say in Wexford, where we were at the weekend. Johnny B, what's your yurt?
My yurt of the week is actually a musical yurt. A band I like from America called Too Many Zoos are coming to Cork. And I think I showed them to you before and you absolutely hated them.
Yeah, not everyone's cup of tea.
They're kind of like a jazz dance. There's one lad playing the...
Jance.
playing the baritone saxophone and another lad playing the trumpet and then there's another lad playing the drums and they just busk around on the trains in New York and I'm going to go see him in Cork. Not very popular in Ireland, as you can imagine, but you will not hear them on, you know, Radio Television. That another musical note that we just on the way home today, we listened to R. Kelly's version of I Believe I Can Fly on Jules Holland. Now, I don't think R. Kelly can fly, but I'm pretty sure R. Kelly thinks R. Kelly can fly, because he came out in this red leather jacket. And Jez Moore, he gave it Holly. Jez, he nearly had me convinced that he could fly by the end of it. So if you're at Notting Lads, look that up on YouTube. And that's my... So Too Many Zoos and R. Kelly are my yurt of the week.
Okay, my yurt of the week is Anton Deck's Saturday Night Takeaway is finally back. Absolutely love it. You love it too, Johnny, don't you?
I've never seen it.
Yeah, he loves it. I knew he did. He's always telling me how much he loves it. No.
You know I don't watch TV, man.
It's a great show. They have an undercover with Amanda Holden this week now. It's a must see.
Who's
not
she?
Just because she's a fine bird. She's a judge on Britain's Got Talent.
What's that?
I think she was a model back in her day. She's a lasher, lad. She's around 50 now, but jeez, she's nice now. She's nice. So that's my yurt of the week. It's a great show, lads. Tune into it. It's on every Saturday. If you're not out drinking pints or eating kebabs, tune into Ant and Deck. Johnny B, your dirt of the week.
My dirt of the week is people not supporting live events. I was at a comedy show recently in Clonmel, and who was playing was John Cleary. He was on Father Ted. He was on The Savage Eye. And he's a hilarious man. And Tom DeBear, there was a lot of good comedians on, and very small crowd. Very, very, there was more. This week, I should have mentioned it earlier on, I made my comeback to GAA training because it was indoors. I told everyone it was because the gig was cancelled, but it was actually because it was indoors, and I hate training outdoors in the muck. And I don't believe in training out in the muck. That's a topic for another day. But there was more people at the Junior Hurling Fitness Test than was at the comedy show.
And that's no good.
And it was great.
Lads, get out and support local comedy and local gigs. Jesus.
Or I'm going to come and fight you.
Johnny will fight you. Or you go on the list along with Jimmy Buckley and the rest of them, right? Now, my dirt of the week. I went to see The Great Showman in the cinema for the second time, right? It was so good the first time. I had to go and see it again, you know, just to make sure it was that good. And as I was queuing up for the tickets, there was a family in front of me. And the kids were going absolutely demented. Now, they were sticking their hands in the pick and mix. They were running around the place. It was nasty shit now, to be fair. Now, I'm not saying... I'm not judging. Well, fuck it. I am judging. Yeah, I am. I don't know if they were good or bad parents, but the young fella was 4 and had his 2 ears pierced. Fuck it, lads. That is not good parenting.
Both his ears pierced,
yeah. And he was running around the place. He had a couple of fried eggs, you know, the jelly sweets hanging over his mouth. He was gone wild.
Having both your ears pierced, like, that's a bit Right Said Fred.
Yeah.
That's a bit madness. Too sexy, like. 1 ear is cool, 2 ears is camp.
But anyway, I was looking, and Ferdinand the Bull was on at the same time, and I was saying, surely, you know, the family are going in to see Ferdinand the Bull. You know, because one child was around 3, I'd say the other lad was 5, and then there was 2, 12 and 13. And then there was the 2 parents. But no, they were going into the fucking Greatest Showman, and in they strutted in the door, trail of jelly beans behind them. And I said, oh, here. So we sat down anyway, and the film was on, and the kids were running around the place, playing fucking Tig, in and out the doors, kicking seats, booting the seats in front of us and everything. And, like, you could barely hear the film. It's a class film, go and see it, like. But, you know, there's light and shade in it. It's a big musical in one sense, and then there's real intimate words. She couldn't hear a fucking thing. The kids were going bananas. And I looked around at the parents a few times. You know, like, you'd be going, shh. Shh.
In your Irish passive-aggressive
shh. And I was saying to people with me, like, I have 2 choices now. I'm either going to have to get up and go home and leave the cinema, or I'm going to go back and punch the father straight into the throat. Now, with 20 minutes left in the film, I got up and went home. But I just have to say, my dirt of the week is those parents. Lads, don't bring kids into the cinema if they're going to be playing 40-40.
And what were the parents doing while the kids were running around?
The parents weren't even sitting with the kids. This is me gripe. They were sitting in the corner, cuddled up there like they were at home in front of the fire.
Were they shifting?
I don't know if they were or not now, but I turned around a couple of times, like, you know, to give them the stare. And they were lost in each other's eyes. And the kids fucking going bananas up and down the aisle.
The stare didn't work.
The stare didn't work, lads. So I was absolutely bubbling by the time I got to the car.
Did you try to shh?
I tried that loss. I was shh, or the tut. You know.
Tried the tut.
Tut. Tried that a lot of times. Didn't work. But that's my dirt of the week, lads. Because if you're going to the cinema, lock up the kids.
I went to the cinema in Tiptown once, And I know, your one came around to the flashlight and told me to take your feet down.
Go away.
And there was no one there. I had my feet up on the edge of the seat in front of me. Take your foot down after rest.
Jesus. And these kids were going bananas.
You could have done with them in Clamell, lad.
Absolutely. Lads, that concludes episode 2 of the Two Johnnies podcast. Once again, rate, review, tell your friends, grab their phones, just download it off that. Be great to get back to number 1 this week. We're in Portlaoise, of course, Saturday night in the Midlands Park Hotel if you want to come and see
Portlaoise.
The Two Johnnies comedy show, big show, small show.
The big show, small show tour. Thanks to everybody who's come to the shows. We have a load of stuff coming up. We're going to Limerick City. We're going to Navan. We're going to Carrickmacross. We're going back to Wexford. We're going to Waterford City. We're going to Mayo. We're doing a kids show in Wexford Town. So all that will be on the website soon.
And we're also going to America. Whoa.
America.
Great crack. Lads, thanks very much. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram. The Two Johnnies. Johnny Smacks, Johnny B. Tipman. And on Snapchat, you get us on Johnny Smacks and Johnny B. Tipman. From Maura, our producer. From me, Johnny Smacks.
From me, Johnny B. Maura, how do we do this week?
Good.
We're improving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only good.
Only good.
B minus. We're getting there.
What would you give us out of 10 for this week?
7.
7. Jesus. She's a hard taskmaster.
Wait, so if you were reviewing us on iTunes, how many stars would you give us?
You can't. I'm not going to put a number on it.
You're doing
really well for your second podcast. Keep it up, guys.
We'll take that. Lads, we'll be back next week.
That's the most patronizing compliment I've ever gotten tomorrow.
Backhanded compliment. We'll be back next week. Same time, same channel. Catch us then.
Galah.
Keep on it. Bye bye.
It's
lovely.
It's the Two Johnnies podcast. The Two Johnnies podcast.
Two Johnnies recording a podcast.
The Two Johnnies podcast is a Big Ball, Small Ball production.